Welcome to the Behaviorist Book Club. We are a community of practitioners focused on helping your clients achieve meaningful and socially significant behavior change. This is your host, Matt Harrington.
Hello, and welcome back to the Behaviorist Book Club podcast. Let's not waste any time, and let's hop right into the article we're going to be reviewing. That is, of course, Roy Hare and colleagues 2023. Apologies, as always, about names. This article is called Teaching Compassion Skills to Students of Behavior Analysis, a Preliminary Investigation. Now, I don't suspect this is going to be a very long episode. It's about exactly what you'd expect. It's very straightforward, but there is a couple things I want to zoom in on, because when I was reading this, I realized, hey, this is a pretty good operational definition of behaviors associated with compassion. And that is something that we as a field really struggle with when we get into words like empathy, compassion, trauma-informed. There's always a group of people screaming from the sidelines, what's the objective definition? What? How do I know what it looks like? Dead man's test, etc., etc., etc. And to be clear, that's an important part of our science. The objectivity, the reliance on science, of course, that is what our field is all about. And I would also venture an argument that says, as a field that is a human service, that is human facing, there are also things that we need to become comfortable with not having clear definitions for. Things we need to be comfortable with accepting on the idea that no, we can't objectively define this every single second of the day, and this is still something that we can evaluate and see if it improves service delivery. And that is a little bit where I think compassion falls. It's not really a wild statement to say that from the beginning, compassion was a crucial part of applied behavior analysis. As soon as you put the applied in front of the behavior analysis, social validity, and by extension, compassion, became arguably the most important dimension as it became, like I said, a customer-facing field. What this article is not going to do is continue the debate back and forth over if we were compassionate in the past or debating the definition of trauma and all the other, frankly, crap that gets in the way of a relatively simple conversation. Does compassion as a value, as a way of acting towards others, does that increase the service delivery provided to the clients? Can we see better results if we adopt a value of compassion? Wolf from 1978 discussed this extensively in his social validity article. Like I said, I told you this isn't something that's new, some like new age type thing. Specifically, Wolf focused on three different areas where social validity has to be present, and by extension of social validity, compassion: treatment goals, procedures, and outcomes. There has to be social validity baked into every one of those. For example, treatment goals had to be related to something that was actually going to help the individual and a goal that the individual actually wanted to accomplish. We needed to have procedures that were humane and were things that participants wanted to experience. And we needed to have outcomes that were valuable, not just on a society level, but also on a one-on-one person wanting to become more than what they currently are type level. Me accomplishing a goal would be a socially valid outcome, right? It may not really be this big overarching thing that gets me more to society, but you know what? It was valuable to me. And that is where social validity lives as well. It's not just contribute to society. What does this look like in 2024? Because this article was written in 1978. It looks like client-focused planning that starts and ends, and this is always important, it and ends with informed consent from clients if possible and caregivers if not. Assent with an A, assent from clients at all times throughout the intervention. Programming with values that are important to the learners, to the caregivers, to the staff, to social validity. and then pacing progress based on comfort of all parties, especially and including the client. And this is something where I always struggled with earlier on in my career, was trying to get to a comfortable pace of learning, not for me and my goals that I wanted to knock off, but for the learner in front of me. Maybe we did need to go a little bit slower so that we can make consistent and comfortable progress. That's social validity in the here and in the now. Even more recently, what does the ethics code tell us about compassion? It's pretty clear. There's four values that the ethics code is based on, and it mentions it by name. We want to benefit others, treat others with compassion, dignity, and respect, behave with integrity, and ensure competence of ourselves, and only practice within that competence. And as that ethics code expanded in 2020 and included phrases like compassion and dignity, we started to see a rise in what I would almost say are different flavors of applied behavior analysis. And this is where we get into the buzzword that you might see on LinkedIn or Facebook. And I have a love-hate relationship with these types of phrases because I don't like the idea of only certain types of ABA being progressive ABA. Some company owns progressive ABA. That's ridiculous. And only the folks who work on PFA and SBT own trauma-informed care. That's completely ridiculous. Where I do think this rise in buzzwords like compassion, behavior artistry, relationship building, even cultural humility, which is better defined than anything else from what I've seen, what I think it does do is it does point to values. I would love something that takes a little flowchart or maybe a Venn diagram and compares all of the stated values in these research papers of behavior artistry versus compassionate care versus trauma-informed care. Because the reality is, even progressive ABA, the reality is it's probably going to be pretty circular, right? The Venn diagram is a circle in the sense that a lot of these values are shared. We're just calling them different things. But as we see the rise in these different flavors, we also see that research is backing some of these things up. And that's great. This article itself came from a special interest paper about compassion, or a special interest issue about compassionate care. The world is moving in this direction, which is, God, it's about time, right? And with that shift towards academic publishing, we're also seeing some pretty good evidence. Research is showing that the interpersonal trainings and the compassionate care and the behavior artistry are improving outcomes for clients, which then begs the question, how do we do more of it? If we have something that's working, how can we expand it? And typically the answer is within our supervision requirements or within our master's programs. And evidence shows that there's very little interpersonal teaching in either of those sections right now. And that's where this article's purpose comes in. It's a very simple purpose. Can we expand on the research and develop a procedure to teach MasterChute students more about compassionate care and behaviors associated with compassionate care? The methods were very simple. There was 4 second-year master's students. The only requirement was that they didn't want them to have any ethics coursework because they didn't want to influence this conversation at all. And there were 11 different skill sets chosen to be considered those compassionate care skill sets. And I'm going to read through each of them because this is where I thought this article would make a pretty cool conversation piece. And I want you to just reflect on, if you were having a conversation with a caregiver, how many of these things would you actually do as well? First off is the basic interviewing skills. So that includes telling the caregiver you're taking notes, nodding along, saying words like, yeah, that's called back channeling, and positive introduction. So that's just the basic starting, I'm here, I'm listening, tell me more type conversation skills. Then look at interest in family. We want to see acknowledging of the child's abilities and efforts, asking a lot of questions about interests and parent priorities, and then reflecting and incorporating parent priorities. Now that's a big one. This section to me is the biggest of the requirements that lead to compassionate care, in my opinion. Because not only are we acknowledging the client's efforts, that means we're incorporating their strengths into the interventions. we're asking about interests so we can better create something that the client wants to participate in. And we're asking about priorities and incorporating priorities. Now, these priorities they specifically mentioned were caregiver priorities. I would also extend that, of course, to client priorities first. So if the client is able to, talking to them about what they would like to be doing. How would you like to change your life with me? How can I help you? If they're not able to do that, then maybe we lean more on caregivers or other strong members of that community. And then joining with the family includes an empathy statement, normalizing, and then partnering with them and their experience. This means becoming more of a part of the emotional family and becoming part of the team. This is, to me, where we stop thinking about these individual clients and we start thinking about joining a client's group, joining their support squad, so that we can better help them and serve their whole unit rather than just serving one, or even worse, just mastering VBMAP goals as we go. Another really interesting secondary dependent variable other than the percentage correct of these skills was the Jefferson Scale of Physician Empathy. This was something where they gave the survey to them at the beginning and then post-teaching, and they wanted to see how much the scores improved. It was a very simple multiple baseline across different classes of behavior, and teaching was a basic didactic instruction and then practice. What they would do is they would say, all right, we're gonna sit down and we're gonna practice the interview. I'm not gonna give you any feedback if it was a baseline session or a testing session, and let's go ahead and go forward. I'm gonna be the caregiver with the client, you're gonna be the interviewer. And then that's where they would measure the skills. Results, I think it's pretty clear. All participants made significant increases in both the survey and the graph skills. So they all rose in their compassion score in the survey. And if you look at the graphs, it's like 50% to 100% for every single skill, starting at 50, going to 100. Social validity, this was another interesting point, was aggressively high across the board. So that was a really cool way to see that not only did this work graphically, but all of the participants rated that this made them feel more compassionate and made them more confident within their interviewing skills. Overall, at the end of the day, it worked. And we can all go home happy, right? We did it. That's the end of the story. No, of course not. And there's still a lot to do. And specifically, we need to start answering this question both on a personal and a system-wide level. Now let's start with personal. Read through that list again. How many of those skills do you really feel like you do every single interview, every single conversation, especially that initial assessment? Let's just take that middle section, interest in family, acknowledging efforts, asking about caregiver and client priorities, incorporating caregiver and client priorities. That's a big one. And specifically, it's a big one in the world of pushing out assessments as fast as possible, right? I'm not talking about the speed of writing. I'm not talking about the central reach templates or the rethink or the this or the that. I'm just simply talking about what is the overall direction of this treatment plan. What is the overall values baked into this treatment plan, and where did those values come from? I can tell you, as someone who's worked with everyone from early intervention to adults, when I work with teens, it's very clear if the values that are in that behavior plan are my values or my client's values. Because my values might say, we need to learn these social skills to get this vocational skill so we can do this. And then the client's values might be way more on the social side, nothing about vocational right now, and looking more at independent living and toleration skills away from their family. And it's clear in the treatment plan that the 20 goals written that are aligned with the client values are going to be something that naturally proceed with more assent and more informed consent and ultimately better outcomes. While neither of the two treatment plans I described were bad sets of goals, one is more compassionate because one listened. Right? One took the client's values into perspective and then actually implemented them within the plan. It would be similar, and this is my soapbox, right? This is what's frustrating, is that if any of us went to a mental health therapist and the mental health therapist, after their interview, said, hey, so what do you want to work on? And you said, all right, so I want to work on my relationship with my mom, becoming a better father, and spending less time on my phone. And then the mental health therapist said, that's great. So your first goal is going to be spending more time outside. The next is going to be talking to your wife more. And the third one is going to be visiting with your father. Those are all goals that maybe have a solid path and may result in better, healthy mental landscape for you, but they weren't your goals, they weren't your values. And that's why it's so frustrating to me why sometimes we as behavior analysts totally miss this clear, obvious step of listening to the client and the caregivers so that you can better incorporate their priorities into your intervention and treatment plan. That one went a little bit off the rails. I think I want to end with just one more consideration for you, one more call to change on a system level, and more of a question because I don't know the answer to this. Where should we put interpersonal skills in terms of teaching new behavior analysts? Because I have a group of supervisees that I'm supervising and hoping that they will become great, fantastic behavior analysts. But is that my job as a supervisor to teach interpersonal skills? Or should it be within the ethics coursework? Should we maybe take a couple paragraphs away from where you're supposed to wear suit and tie every day and instead put in compassion? Because there's a lot to learn in your master's program, and it's already a two-year program. If we expand any more, we're going to start moving into doctorate territory. So where should the compassionate care intervention go? The answer is probably everywhere, right? It should go in multiple different locations. But the reality is that somewhere, someone's got to own it. And I'm leaning a little bit more towards the master's degrees because that's the place with the most oversight. So I'm more confident that it's going to be taught well in that setting. Anyways, let me know what you think. I'd love your thoughts on it. You can always comment on Facebook Cafe or comment on the show notes or anything like that. Let me know. Anyways, I'll talk to you later. I got a new episode coming out in a couple of days, so I'll see you then. So there you have it. That's the end of our podcast. It would mean the world to me if you commented or shared or however you're interacting with this content. Subscribe if you're on a podcast platform. It means the world to me. And also, if you're available, give a review to this podcast. Give it 5 stars if you love it. Give me feedback if not. I read every single one, and it does a ton to boost the visibility of content like this in the overall algorithm. If you want to continue engaging with the Behaviorist Book Club, the best place to go is the ABA Cafe Facebook group. You can find it just by typing in the ABA Cafe into your Facebook search bar. It is a group of research-minded practitioners engaging and collaborating together to become better behavior analysts through our application of practitioner-focused research. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next one.